Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 115. On this week's show, we are going to review Pixar's Coco. We are also going to discuss Christmas in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype is Courtney Van Ren. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And from the Main Street Gazette is none other than Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, maybe walking across the bridge to the land of the dead, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. You are listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we have a bustling group. You can search for Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to the group. If you're already there, add your friends. You can find the show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, where's a couple other spots that you can interact with the show?
You can find our post on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find the ways to help support the show.
Ryan Wilson, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette and everything that you do over there?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for our Instagram or Twitter, it's also mainstgazette. And if you're looking for us on Facebook, just search for Main Street Gazette and you'll find us there.
Courtney, where can everyone find you?
Everyone can find me in the Facebook group.
That is where you live.
That's right.
And guys, if you're listening to this show and you enjoy the show and you want to support it in some ways that, you know, something other than everything that we've said, if you just go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review for us, we have this thing where every 5-star review we get, we read at the end of the show. So we would love to have you hop over there, give us a help, give a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show. Thank you live. And that would be much appreciated. What else is going on over there? Well, let's talk about, just really quick, the Patreon group. I want to talk about how great it is, because I've really had a good time with it, just to get, you know, explain it, you know, to everyone, because usually Patreon's like, what do you do there? So Patreon is a way to support the show in a way that basically will keep us, you know, going into the future. And the benefit of joining it is that every week, except Thanksgiving, because everyone's busy on Thanksgiving. Weekly, we have a movie that we watch together as a group in a little secret Facebook group, and we basically live thread it. We are all in there commenting on it and talking about it, and usually how odd it is because we've had some weird movies recently. And we just have a great time. It's, you know, a weekly event that's exclusive to the people who are a production assistant level Patreon member. So again, you can find that over at patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour. Welcome everyone to this week's show. Last week we briefly spoke towards Pixar's Coco because Melissa did see it at the Disney Parks blog event, right?
Yep.
But now we have all seen it, so now we can speak to it in a bigger, fuller sense. And by the look on the activity on the group, all of you have seen it too. So while this is a spoiler-free review, there will be a point late in the episode where we will announce that, hey, we're going to talk about spoilers now, so you'll know to exit the facilities. And if you haven't seen it yet, we don't want to ruin anything for you. But that's going to be the second thing we talk about in the show. First thing we're going to talk about is another thing that we saw at a preview level about a week ago. Right?
Yeah.
And then we saw just last night, well, I should say we didn't actually see it, is the Christmas in Wizarding World of Harry Potter, that they are holding the main event in Universal Studios, and then they have some other stuff going on in Diagon Alley. Melissa, why don't you first tell me, we went to an event, it was an annual pass holders invite for the castle show that's happening over at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
For the holiday season. Mm-hmm. It was a controlled crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some things going on with traffic. Why don't you just tell everyone sort of the layout of what that was?
Yeah, I mean, the Hogsmeade in Islands of Adventure, you know, you kind of walk in from, they kind of direct you in from Seuss Landing over through the Mythos area and into Hogsmeade. So you pass under the arch and then you're kind of funneled, you know, to the right, past the stores up to the castle where they then let you kind of stay, see the show. You can go on the bridge and watch the show, and then they have you leave along, you know, the opposite side, heading, you know, against where the three broomsticks are, and then you can leave.
Yeah, but and I don't know if it's any different right now. When we went that preview night, though, there was no one saying, okay, everyone, move along, next group. It was just sort of naturally happened. Like, people was up there, they watched it once, and then they moved along.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're trafficking, like, okay, everyone, move up. You know, that was your viewing. Because if you haven't been in Hogsmeade, it's really important to know the area in front of the castle. It's not like when you go in front of, you know, say, Cinderella's castle. It's a lot more narrow, and it's also the entrance to an attraction. Like, their major attraction is right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they first announced this, a genuine reaction for me was, how the hell are they going to do this with all the lack of space over there?
Yeah.
So this was how they did it. It was a queue, but it wasn't a queue.
They last night when we went, they kind of made it more into a queue because there was definite, you know, you can't walk on this side. This is the exiting side. This is the entrance side. And I was like, I need to get to the other side because that's where the restrooms are. It was interesting.
Yeah, which in there, I agree with you. Like, that's a hard thing to be like, okay, but we have to go to the restroom. There is a restroom 5 minutes in the other direction. Like, if you really needed to, like, if it was a dire emergency and you were like, and whatever, there was 100, you know, 200 people walking towards you, just turn around, go the other way, and you'll get to the one that's in the land that no one cares of anymore. I don't even remember what they call it. What is the name
mythos.
Of the call it?
It's the Mythos area.
It's not the name of the restaurant. I don't think they call it the Mythos area.
The Lost Continent?
Lost Continent, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mythos is a Mythos. Because that remember that thing won Best Air Restaurant in like 1996? They still have a banner for that. It's really funny. I really wish they would get rid of that thing. It wasn't 96. Don't worry about correcting me on that one. So what did you think of the show, though? Like, we'll talk about the crowd thing because that really comes into play more from our experience last night. What did you think of the show itself?
I mean, the show itself I thought was really nice. You know, it was I liked the music. You know, they had the regular score, and then they had my favorite piece of music is the ballroom scene from the Goblet of Fire one?
Goblet of Fire, yeah.
Which I enjoy the most. But yeah, it was really pretty projections. Nothing breathtaking, but it was really nice.
Yeah, that's my review. It's nice. It's nice. It's good. I don't know. You can go see it once. You should definitely go see it. I think it's worth to see. But I will say there's nothing new about it. Projection shows are kind of getting stale already, and they just were introduced. Mm. So somebody better set something on fire or something better happen because not much occurs. And I will say that I found something very distracting during the scene that you're right. The colors are gorgeous and the music is really great during the ballroom scene. But they have the figures up on the castle doing like the dance. They are the worst CG human beings like you've ever seen, and they're so stiff. If you look at them for more than a couple of seconds, you'd be like, oh, that's a thing that I would see in a Windows 98 video game, you know. That it's pretty, I thought it was bad looking.
See, like on the opposite side, I saw the projections on the Hollywood Tower of Terror, and I thought those projections were fantastic. And they did have like regular people in them, like they have people.
Regular people.
Well, like there's also like Toy Story, so it's like, you know.
Yeah.
You can make Toy Story, obviously, and it doesn't matter how CG it looks. But in a way, But the people for the Tower one, like, they look good. It looked much sharper, and uh-huh. it looked much clearer. And, like, the stuff that they did on that projection was really cool. Whereas, like, the Harry Potter one was like, yeah, it's nice.
It's nice. And then they have, the little bit of fireworks that they can do or choose to do, they do. And that happens only at the end. It's only really, like, a spray of fireworks, and that's pretty much it. But I thought it looked really nice, the theme of, obviously, Hogsmeade is already kind of dressed up that you're there during winter. So it all kind of mixes together very, very well. I just, projection shows are great, but are they the end-all be-all of show entertainment? No, it just seems like a lot cheaper way of doing things. Ryan, you're kind of I see you're, like, nodding with me and stuff. Like, what are your feelings on this sort of movement towards projection shows?
I'm getting to the point of us. I'm getting well beyond the saturation point at this point. You have it at Magic Kingdom. You have it at Animal Kingdom. You have two at the studios. You have it at Universe. Like, it's great. Okay, we figured out this technology. This can't be the only thing we do. We talked about it a little bit with Happily Ever After, where it does also limit where you can be in to crowd sizing. You can't be on the other side of the park to see fireworks now. You have to be standing right on Main Street if you're on Magic Kingdom. You start to limit yourself with what you can and cannot do when this is the avenue you choose.
Melissa, I know that was one of your main sticking points with Happily Ever After as well.
Yeah, and, like, it's interesting, though, because, like, the way that they do the projection on, like, the Tree of Life, I feel like it's so much... I don't know. It's so much different there, and I really enjoy, maybe because it's like the continuous show, which is also what the Wizarding World is, but I don't know.
Yeah, but the Wizarding World is that one show. Animal Kingdom is a different show.
It varies.
It can vary from their different ones. I actually agree with you. I think that the one at Animal Kingdom is the one that works best. I really like Happily Ever After, but I understand everyone's, complaints about it. Also, I'm always the guy who's, bitching and moaning about... You have to do everything on Main Street. You can't go anywhere else. You always got to be stuck on Main Street for like 3 hours of a stretch if you want to do all that stuff. So, that does fall into that category, towards that.
Yeah.
Courtney, what do you think about towards this? Again, the projection show is becoming the, I don't know, is it the main spot of entertainment now coming down from all these, parks?
It kind of seems like it. I really like it. I the first time I saw it, I thought it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. But again, like you've all said, they're doing it for everything now, and it is limiting. If I haven't seen Happily Ever After yet, so I can't speak to that. But from what I understand, so much of the show is the projections as opposed to the fireworks, as we've had, like with Wishes, you could be mm-hmm. anywhere and see and appreciate Wishes. But it's not the same with Happily Ever After. So I think that would be very frustrating for guests. And if they already do the other projection show, I don't know if are they still doing the other projection show before Happily Ever After?
I think they do it after.
Okay. I mean, if they're still doing that too,
yeah.
I liked the dichotomy between that and then Wishes before. I would sit for both, and I'd watch that show multiple times. So if it's that much of it, it's a little too much, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how they do going forward, but this definitely seems like the way going forward, because the Star Wars fireworks are heavy on projections. The projection show then on the Tower of Terror is obviously a projection show. We've got
Jingle Bell,
Happily
Jingle
Ever
Bam.
After, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bam, which is another like projection heavy show.
Although this year, Steph and I did watch it actually a couple weeks ago, and I feel like they added a lot more fireworks to that show than mm-hmm. was last year. Like this year, there were a lot of almost like 180 type fireworks for multiple points throughout the show.
Okay.
So I actually think they upped the fireworks for that show, and it was really something else.
As in, it was good.
It was really good. Yeah,
like crashing my car is really something.
No.
Else.
We liked it. We liked it a lot last year, but I really liked it a lot this year.
Okay. All right.
It makes me worried, like what they're gonna do, because we always talk about like Illuminations going away, and like right now that's like the fireworks show. Like mm-hmm. I hope they don't say like, hey, look, we can project something on Spaceship Earth, and like, don't worry about it.
I don't think so. I mean, they have that bay for a reason. Well, I don't know if that's the reason they built it. Like, and upon thy I shall fire works. But I think that's still gonna be that thing.
I hope so.
Look. You can argue that there's a 20-minute projection show in the middle of Illuminations,
well,
okay?
Valid, yeah.
So there is a globe that be a spinning for a long time there. So anyways, so the preview that we had of Wizarding World, the Christmas thing, was manageable. Last night we went there, which, okay, it's you know, holiday weekend. It's a madhouse as it is. And we went in there with a couple of friends. And upon entering and looking at the situation, all four of us in unison were like, we don't have to do this right now. And we turned around and we left.
Yeah.
And we were like, I discovered that my friends never even knew there was a Cat in the Hat ride after being annual pass holders for a year. So we went and did the Cat in the Hat ride, which is still fantastic to this moment. But the amount of people that were going there to see the show was dwarfing the amount of space that they have.
Yeah.
And that queue was a hard queue. Like, there was a lot of people. It was a lot of traffic. They close off the bridge totally.
Yeah.
So they bring you through a different path that normally isn't even open to get from Jurassic Park, which needs to be condemned, over to, you know, Wizarding World of Harry Potter. It just seemed way too small for the volume of people that are going to want to go see it. I mean, I don't know if they had a great time, but it just did not seem inviting to me. I was like, I don't need to do this. So we got out of there, and then we went Seuss. Then we went over to Diagon Alley. Diagon Alley was near the end of the night. Gorgeous looking.
Yeah.
Diagon Alley looked absolutely gorgeous. Had all the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like bunting? Is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
It had all that. Had wreaths, and it just really looked great. And there were no production shows. So who'd have thunk it?
It's just a dragon.
Just a dragon. Just have something breathing fire at you. Everyone's going to be happy, guys. No one really. That's all the world wants is a fire-breathing dragon. So the next time that you guys. Are you guys going to come here by any chance while this whole holiday shabazz is going on?
Not me.
Doesn't look like it.
Boo to you.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey, I have a 3-day weekend. You just need to talk to the missus about that.
Do I really? I'll have that conversation. When's the 3-day weekend? Mark this down.
It's when you guys are coming back. It's like the 9th, 10th, 11th.
So we'll be back. that's all I heard. Yes. So we'll be back. Okay, great. So that sounds good. Okay, guys. Main course, shall we?
Yeah. Well, do we still have a little entree?
Thanksgiving. Do we?
Yeah.
We have a side dish.
The pasta course for the Italian family. We have the antipasto now. Now we need the pasta.
Are we talking about frozen?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I was referring to that in the whole thing because we had to go to it. Let's talk about the short that I don't remember the name of.
Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Olaf's Frozen Adventure. Coming at you. 20 minutes long. Previous to the showing of Coco. Which I also want to say, the best part of the night, in a good night, was seeing an Incredibles 2 trailer and not having to run out of the theater to avoid a Last Jedi trailer. So it was a night of pluses for me personally. We didn't have a Jedi trailer on there. I didn't know if anyone else did. But that was nice not to have to run out. Really quick note. You know what? Before we get to the pasta, the antipasta.
Oh, no.
Which is, I never understood that. Like, anti-pasta? Who's anti-pasta? Certainly not my mozzarella. Children's movies. Mm. They are garbage.
Those we had previews.
We sat through so many trailers, and it was nothing but record scratches, fart jokes, and someone saying, oh, no! Like, that happened for 15 straight minutes. There was an old SNL skit where a lot of people get locked in a movie theater and they have to keep watching the trailer for a... who was the first girl bartender in Cheers? What was her name? Not Goldie, nope. I can't remember who it was.
I don't know.
Anyways, it was a movie that kept starring that woman and they just kept showing the trailer. Eventually, everyone ate each other. Garth Brooks was in the episode. It was really, really good. So... I'm going to look up Cheers in a moment because I have to remember what this woman is.
Are we talking about Diane? Are we talking about?
Yes, Diane. Who is Diane? It wasn't the other one. It was the blonde-haired woman. Oh, Jesus. Sam is to dancing, and she is?
Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall. Yes, I believe Shelley Duvall is your Lord and Savior was something that someone yelled while eating Garth Brooks' head. So sitting through, I don't even know how many trailers,
Too many.
That made me want to just devour myself in a cannibalistic rage. Those movies look terrible. I'm so sorry for all of you parents. I really am. Because you're probably going to have to go see Ferdinand the Bull, which looks awful. I hope it's funny for you guys, but man,
oh
man.
You don't want to see John Cena as a lovable bull?
Oh, I don't. I do not.
They didn't.
Me either.
Did you guys have the trailer, though? Did you guys have the trailer where it was John Cena, like, introing the trailer?
Yeah, well, that's kind of been most of their trailers.
They missed cueing his wrestling music. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that might happen in the movie. I kind of feel like that should happen in the movie. I mean, but that's a good way for kids to understand, like, oh, I want to say this because they love John Cena. I don't know how young John Cena fans get. They look, I mean, watching wrestling, they're pretty damn young. So they know how to market it, at least. Fart jokes and John Cena. I mean, that's just... That works. Anyways, fart jokes aside, I'm so sorry for everyone that has to watch something about an uppity squirrel or anything that happens. Oh, yeah. It's just not good.
Sherlock Gnome.
Almost.
That was the one that had like the 5 Woof. Minutes of fart jokes in it.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. They just get like all this talent to read the worst stuff.
Yep.
I don't feel for them. They get paid plenty of money.
Oh, and that's,
I just feel bad for the parents who have to sit through all that and be like, this wasn't terrible. Just didn't want to make me throw my child into, you know, the market and then just leave them. All right. Frozen's Olaf Adventure Christmas Story, right?
Sure.
You're going to shoot your eye out, kid. What did y'all think of this 20-minute escapade? Is 20 minutes a bit much for a short, maybe? Melissa.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, because... you think it was? A little overly long?
I thought it was a little long. I felt like it wanted to tell you the story about Olaf, but then it also like needed you to talk about Anna and Elsa, and it was just like, I don't know. I don't know if it needed all of that.
Okay. Courtney, what did you think about inclusion of the learning more about Arendelle overall? I mean, that was really kind of, that was one of the main things about this bit.
I don't feel like I learned anything more about Arendelle. I thought that I already knew that they didn't have family traditions and whatever. So I was kind of like, I don't feel like I learned anything really at all. And the conclusion that they came to at the end of it was like, well, I kind of knew that too. So, it was very long. And I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought there were some good songs in it. You know, I don't have any overall major complaints, but yeah, it was long.
Ryan, what about you? What did you think about this short? Did you think it delivered?
For what it was, yeah. I think and I went and tried to find the production notes on this, and I couldn't find it. I really feel like this was set up to be a half-hour television special. Like, it was set up to be Toy Story of the Time Forgot, a Toy Story of Terror. Like, it was one of those, and then they realized, oh, we have a gap here. Let's plug it in here. And that's what it felt like. It felt like I was watching, like, a half-hour Frozen Christmas special.
Well, that would make sense because you would probably have about 3 commercial breaks with that, and they're about 3 minutes each, so that would add 9 minutes. You're at 29 minutes.
Yeah.
And
when I watched it, you could actually kind of see where, you're like, oh, that's a natural break. That's a natural break. Like, you could kind of see where that would have happened. Mm-hmm. Overall, yeah, there were a couple of songs that I thought were cute. There was maybe a little bit, you know, too much of some of the Force Anna and Elsa bits, but it was, you know, it was fine.
That relationship seems to not be drawing from the well as much.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, hey, you resolved your thing. Let's stop talking about how things were tough when you didn't speak to each other. I mean, look, I'm not saying like these things just go away, but in cartoon world, maybe they do. I really liked the Olaf song, the one where he was just going from house to house. I was like, man, that was really funny. Like, this could have been this, and I would have been happy with it. You know, the oh my God, Olaf is our safe haven thing. Yeah, that makes sense. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only memory they ever shared.
Yeah, like that should have been like such a surprise. I like them going through the stuff in the attic, though. I thought that was kind of a good little bit. But
yeah, I feel like there are parts where you could have trimmed it. And then like I liked the part in the beginning where like they show you the whole like town tradition of the bell. Like, I guess that might be like a very, I don't know if that's a Norway thing or whatever, but like that was a cool like, you know, thing to show for everybody. And then I liked the Olaf part, and I liked the part at the end. Like, you know, it was just visually gorgeous with like her creating the ice tree and stuff. But
yeah,
like
those people are really used to magic now. They're totally
I mean, she's their queen, so.
I mean, there were just no selling the whole thing. Girl made like stairs and stuff. They're like, we'll walk across these now. Jesus, all right. The magic is gone. Christoph,
they're afraid of what would happen if they spoke against her.
We don't know what the real underbelly of Arendelle is. Christoph seems just really thrown in here.
Yeah.
That was my biggest thing, was just like, didn't he have a song? He has a song, mm-hmm. didn't he? That wasn't necessary. That whole thing with the disgusting soup thing, I guess that was supposed to be like the joke of it, was it's a disgusting soup or stew. Throw a bone in there, you got a stew, baby. That I thought was really unnecessary. Like that you could have cut, no one would have noticed.
Yeah. I mean, they had kind of done that in the original movie. You know, they had, what's his name, Jonathan Groff. Okay, yeah. I always forget if there's an R in there.
Yeah, because you just say Groff sauce like he's a three-year-old.
Sorry, that's what Lin-Manuel Miranda calls himself.
You're not Lin-Manuel Miranda. I want to point that out.
I defer to the, you know.
If you know the man's real name, it'd be nice. I'm just kidding.
They did that in the original movie. They had him, and then they were like, oh, we don't have a song for him. So that's when they threw in the reindeer song. So
that song is clever, though.
I know, but I feel like they were trying to do that same thing here. Like, oh, let's make a clever song for Christoph again. And it just was still like...
Also, that song from the first movie told you everything you needed to know about that character. Like, it literally told you everything you needed to know about that character. This was just, hey, man, we got to get this cat. Like, cats love it. We got to get this guy in here.
No, I know.
Well, it was the same thing as what we saw with Frozen Fever. He had that, his role in that entire short was tacked on.
Yeah.
So I've never seen it.
They don't. You're fine. You're good to not see it. But I feel like they can't figure out what to do with that character anymore, so they just keep tacking him into scenes.
Yeah, because it feels like they don't want to necessarily like push the whole Anna and Christoph thing, but like that's like a thing. So
are they not dating in the universe, or are they dating? I thought that they were-ish. Oh, there was a really funny line from, was it Olaf who was like, "You can do better." That was the thing. Like he was by far the best element of it, which makes sense because it's his title. But maybe he didn't need the whole gang to show up, Maybe we didn't need that.
I don't think we need like a little half rendition of First Time in Forever again. Like, I don't know. Like there were.
Yeah, I don't need to hear that anymore.
Yeah, like we get it. Like there's a lot of firsts coming back. Like
that was, it's good. You know what? Now that you said that, that brings up a good thing. Courtney, in the first song that Anna and Elsa sang, it was kind of like a list of, hey, do you remember this older song? And I was like, I definitely do. That is a line from the other song. That's a title from another song. It just didn't hit with me, that opening.
No, it didn't to me either. I never like that device. I don't think it's useful. It's helpful so if you have a movie that's marketed toward children and you're trying to keep them interested and you have them say, hey, here's the song. Remember this song? And then they remember, the first movie that they love so much. You're trying to keep these kids interested through Frozen 2. So it makes sense in that way, but I hate that device. Just write a new song.
Yeah, because I liked the Olaf song. That felt completely fresh and new, and it was actually really good.
It was really good. I thought that was clever. Like that whole bit was really fun. I had a good time with that. There was really good visual gags.
Yeah.
Christmas is crazy. Everyone's crazy. We all make up insane things that we say, oh, we're going to do this. That's basically what that song told me.
My favorite is when he called out the Christmas tree. He's like, you put a tree carcass up?
Oh, yeah. Like, the tree carcass bit was funny. That was good. Spoilers, I guess, on this short. Don't worry about it. Bigger question is, why wasn't there a Pixar short?
Yeah, that is the bigger question, because I love the Pixar
shorts.
Was
there an explanation for any of that given at all?
No.
No, my only theory towards it is that they typically, they push out a good short once a year. And because this was a year where we had two Pixar films, that they put it on the front one of Cars 3 and then left this one open.
What? Do you think that this was put here because wider audiences, may have a hesitation in going to see a film about the Land of the Dead that is largely, I'm going to just say, white, white people might have a little thing where they're like, I don't know the Land of the Dead. I don't recognize Mexican culture very well. I don't understand this as quickly. because not that like there's a rat culture, but like other Pixar films that were extremely good had a hard time connecting with audiences because they weren't instantly connectable through the trailers. So Ratatouille had that problem. WALL-E had that problem. So did you think that they maybe had a little bit of an issue, like just audiences overall, like this might be a weirder movie to sell on them. Like this isn't, you know, I don't know. Like maybe this is a little harder to market for us. And putting something like Frozen is very recognizable. It's going to make kids want to tell their parents, I want to go see this, where maybe kids aren't saying, I want to go see Coco. Like, maybe that was sort of put into the depth as well?
Maybe, but I can't recall seeing it on a trailer anywhere. I can't recall seeing it on a commercial or that's a poster. Yeah. Like, they haven't marketed it. I mean, there were kids in the theater who were, like, shocked that there was Frozen attached to it. So it's possible that that's why they did it, because word of mouth will spread now. But I don't know that that was necessarily the frontline thought.
All right.
And I feel like it's weird because I feel like Coco itself has gotten so much like positive word of mouth, whereas the Olaf one, like, it's either been silent or it hasn't been great word of mouth.
But word of mouth, well, again, that's just to get people in the audiences, because like people don't go to the movies because they read positive reviews. If that were right, then Transformers movies would not make money, because they haven't gotten good reviews since the first film. But people still showed up opening weekend because they wanted to go see robots fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And the reviews came out before, and they all said like, this is not good. It never stops people from going. Reviews are weird. Bad reviews don't stop people from going to a theater. Good reviews might bring people into a theater. That's pretty much it. Everyone else was going to go anyway. If a movie doesn't perform, it's because people just weren't interested in it. Like, I'm a DC fan. I didn't have like a big desire to see Justice League because nothing that they showed from the trailers like was exciting. And that was the overall response that they got at the box office. The majority of people didn't wait for the reviews to come out in Rotten Tomatoes, and they were like, nope, can't go see this now. They just were like, Wonder Woman was good, but nothing else they did was good, and I really kind of don't care. Mm-hmm. And that was why they didn't go. So it's weird. I don't know if reviews matter very much anymore. I really don't think they do.
I mean, I can tell you trailers are not something to go by, because
the last few
trailers for Disney animated or Pixar animated like have been weird. For lack of a better word.
They've just been like lacking in showing what this thing was really at its heart.
Like the initial like stinger, like they did with like Incredibles 2, like the short stuff, the little bit that you saw of Coco initially, like that was like really like, oh, we need to see this, like it looks great. And then like once they start giving you like the actual trailers, it's like no, weird.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Their trailers have been pretty bad in the overall sense of things. So anyways, that was a thing that I'm sure that they're always, you know, curious about, you know, marketing a family film to the masses can be tricky when you have other, you know, other stuff, you know, having people's money taken apart. I do think that Coco is going to probably win this week as well, number one, so that it's off to a really great start. And let's talk about that movie. You want to just get into it?
Yes.
All right. So Coco is, of course, from Pixar. And it is directed by Lee Unkirk. Unkrich, I always get his name wrong because I have no idea how to really say it. He's, you know, directed Toy Story 3, which was massively phenomenal. He is one of the heartbeats, really, of the company. He's sort of been there. Has he been there from the beginning? Or did he start with Nemo? He may have started with Nemo or Toy Story 2, whichever one was earlier. I forget which one. Oh, no, he was on Toy Story. I take that back. He was editor on Toy Story 2. So he's been there from the beginning. He's co-directed by Adrian Molina, whom directed one of the only Pixar film I have yet to see, which is Good Dinosaur. But he was also a writer and a co-director on this as well. The cast is very large. We're not going to go through the whole cast the way we normally do and all that kind of stuff. We're just going to talk about the movie itself. This, of course, will be non-spoiler for the movie. We'll just go around the table, the virtual table, and give our impressions of what we thought about Coco. Why don't we start with you, Mr. Ryan Wilson?
If you've seen anything of it, it's beautiful, and they back that up with a really great story that has been masked by all the marketing for this movie. So it's fantastic.
Courtney?
I absolutely loved it. I think I think that the visual impressions that we got of the movie beforehand really well prepared you for what you were going to get without spoiling anything. Because I think what we got in the film, while it was directed by the, you know, the previews that we saw, what we got in the film was so much more than I was expecting. But visually, it was great. I love the story. I really enjoyed this movie.
Melissa, I'm going to ask you the same question. What was your, you know, what were your feelings towards seeing Coco?
I really liked it. Visuals aside, because they are amazing, I actually really love the soundtrack. I think this is one of the first, like, Pixar movies where, like, I feel like there were songs that, you know, the characters sang that I really enjoyed, that I sought out as soon as I left the preview. The Parks Block preview, I like immediately hopped on Spotify and wanted to just listen to that soundtrack again and again. So not only did they do, I think, a fantastic job with visuals as per Pixar, you know, kind of has been doing, but their lyrics, I feel like, are like really, really great.
I think it's damn fine. And they hit it right out of the park on this one. And, you know, everyone was super excited when we saw just the art, you know, previewed. It was like, oh, this is, you know, the theme they're going to go for. That was very exciting from the beginning. And the art, the layers of art that they present to you in this film is something else. You know, this is a movie that is just very complex looking. And the cinematography out of Pixar on this one is kind of off the charts into what I think is some of their best cinematography. It can stand up to the likes of WALL-E, which I still think is their number one cinematography, like shot visual film. From its cinematography aspect, story is great. they don't reinvent the wheel on the story. You can say that the story is, you know, we've seen very various versions of it before, but they do a good job in making it connect. You feel a good connection to the characters. Mm-hmm. Melissa, I think you're right. This is sort of the first Pixar musical.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call it a musical, but it is real close. The thing is, no one breaks into song without it being something that's happening in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he doesn't walk across, you know, no one's like walking across the bridge and like, we're walking across the bridge and singing a song. Like, it doesn't happen, you know. It's because someone's actually performing a song in the movie.
Yeah.
So they got a musical without doing a musical, which is kind of smart, kind of impressive. Something, again, something new for Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's one of their best ones.
Yeah.
I really do.
It really is. I really enjoy the surprise out of it. Like, we were hoping it was going to be good. I watched, like, one of the first extended trailers.
I was hoping it was going to be terrible.
Shush your face. I got nervous because, like, the first trailer that I saw kind of made it seem like, oh, it's going to be very cookie cutter. I was worried there was going to, like, be a Brave kind of repeat here. And
my mom's a dead bear?
She's not dead.
Zombie bear?
No, she's just a bear.
But the Coco version would have been.
No,
mom's a dead bear.
No, but I got really nervous because I was like, oh, it's just going to be, you know, the same kind of thing, and it wasn't, thankfully.
Did you guys have what did you think of the characters? There are a lot. There's a lot. You know, the family is wide, and there are a lot of characters. You know, we only get like one or two lines out of a number of them, but. The family of Miguel is the heart of the movie. Courtney, do you think that they delivered on the? And also, I want to point out, I don't know anything about Mexican culture. I really am, like, dumb culturally. But the family dynamic felt familiar. Like, from a very Italian family. It was like, some of these things are pretty familiar, especially that grandmother. That's pretty accurate. We may have a lot more in common than we thought after all. Aww. Star shoots in the sky, the more you know, and everyone's happy. But what did you think about the family dynamic, Courtney?
I thought it was pretty well built. I cared about not necessarily all of the individuals, but I cared about the individuals I was meant to care about. And I think that it was a good representation of maybe what a big family is like, regardless of whether it's, you know, a Mexican family or an Italian family or, you know, I think it was well represented.
Ryan, I agree with Courtney. And we'll get into this more in the spoiler thing. I did have a moment in the film, two moments in the film, where I felt like there was almost an overt cruelty towards Miguel, who is a kid who, you know, this isn't ruining anything. Miguel loves music. Like, he wants to have music as part of his life. His family has a stigma around, you know, the music, and that it should not be part of your life. And I felt that there were two parts that almost verged on, like, 80s bully cruelty out of one of his own family members. And I didn't like it the first time it happened, because I was like, well, that seems a little extreme. And then it almost happened again, and I think I audibly said, like, oh, come on with this. Like, I didn't want, like, that again. Did you have any issues with, you know, anything, any sort of the thing with the family, you know, dichotomy? Is that the right word? Sure. Don't worry about it. The family
stuff?
With that.
Yeah, no. There were a couple moments that were very stark, and it drew into great contrast this, you know, especially for a child, especially for someone who's young and trying to, you know, find their way in the world. And then to do it so overtly, so it pushed a little bit. And I do know that they went and they had so many advisors, and like some of the stuff that happened, such as that character's like weapon of choice in the movie was not her original weapon of choice in the movie. Like, they had switched that around. And so there were some notes that took to make it more sensitive to the culture, sensitive to people. But yeah, it was a little hard to watch, especially the first time it happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then speaking to the rest of the family, I agree. I think it speaks to what a large family looks like. But it is at the same time, and this happens in large families, some people got lost in the shuffle in this movie. You know, and like Courtney said, I cared about the characters I was meant to care about. The other ones were kind of there. I may have gotten confused on a couple of characters a couple of times. And, you know, then there's a moment of comic relief from a couple of them.
His parents were in it, but they weren't very vital to the plot, actually.
No, because really, and like, you know, you have like that kind of like matriarchal, like, you know, family situation. So like that was more of the focus. It wasn't really his direct parents. It was the head of the family.
I really liked that his parents were around. Like, even though they didn't like factor into the plot all that much, but I liked that they didn't do the normal route of he lost his parents.
Yeah.
You know, like, they didn't do that, which you see in what every other Disney film, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, what were we trying to figure out a couple days ago? Melissa was trying to figure out, like, what other Disney films, like, are all about, like, family values.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not a lot. Like, when you went from the very beginning, like, that deal with just the family dynamic, you know? Because so many of, like, the Grimm fairy tales they started with really don't have anything to do with that. So it was funny. Like, you would think Disney, the family company. But they didn't really do a movie about family
till much later.
Till much, 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 much later into their thing. Anyways. Melissa, did you have anything that... What was something that specifically stuck out for you in a negative and a positive way? Like, did you have anything?
In a negative way? There was something towards the end where I kind of got a little like, oh, they're doing this again kind of thing. But the way that they made up for it kind of worked out well, so it didn't bother me, like, overall.
Okay, we'll talk about that
spoilers. But overall, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I don't know actually what you guys are referring to with the whole cringing
thing. We'll talk about that.
So, yeah, I definitely
would
want that.
We'll definitely get into that.
But I don't know. I loved it overall. I was moved by the songs, by the connections. I think it's phenomenal that the soundtrack has the same song on there five different ways, and like each way is a different, you know, meaning to it. And I don't know, I think and that song, actually the key song, was written by the Andersons, the ones who wrote the Frozen music. Anderson Lopez. Yeah.
Okay.
And when somebody pointed that out to me in the group, I think it was Corey pointed out to me in the group, like, I would not have ever thought that they were the ones who wrote that. And I felt like both like, wow, and like, great, you know, because like, it shows like they can write other, you know, music and still it being just as emotional as Let It Go. And for me,
Courtney, you know, whenever we do our normal, you know, reviews going back in the Disney catalog, you know, we cut to you to speak about the music. So Michael Giacchino is here once again on a Pixar soundtrack, and, you know, Does he continue his streak of becoming, possibly becoming the modern day John Williams? Even though John Williams is still working, is he our next John Williams?
I mean, I would say that he is. I don't know that this movie is the best representation of his score work.
Okay.
Because this movie is so centered around songs, many of which were not written by him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know that that's the, this is the best representation of, you know, his work. I would say look to WALL-E, look to look to Up.
Yeah.
Like those are the things I would say that are, you know, quintessential for him. But I mean, it, this is still a great score. I just think when you have a song centric movie and the songs aren't written by the composer, it kind of throws a wrench into that whole thing.
Is that good though? Do you, I mean, is it nice to kind of have that as a difference in this one? It makes it a little different than the other Pixar films.
Yeah, I think it really is. I there's a certain feel to his scores, and I don't think I got that feel from this score, which I think is super, super positive considering the subject matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I really like on the soundtrack, because they also do it in the theaters, they have both the English and the Spanish version of the songs on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And like listening to the soundtrack in Spanish and reading all about it, like, I want to go see this movie dubbed in Spanish. Like,
what was it? They were saying, I think over the first weekend, it became the highest grossing film in Mexico history.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, I would love to. I've read that, you know, the reception has been very, very positive in the community itself.
It has.
Which is very important because, you know, there were some stuff in, like, Moana particularly, mm-hmm. where, you know, people of that culture were like, well, this is kind of stupid. You know, like, we don't need him we don't need Maui slapping himself and doing, you know, a haka, a half haka every time he gets excited. Doesn't seem to have anything over the years. Just, Ryan, do you want Pixar to do a musical after seeing what they can do with songs be sungin'? Do you think Pixar should one day tackle a musical?
I think they could. I think that if there were doubts, this kind of laid those to rest. You know, in the way of, like you said, they got a musical without doing a musical.
Yeah.
But they've definitely set the precedent that they can handle it appropriately. So I think somewhere down the road, it wouldn't be inappropriate for them to do a musical. I think maybe, and obviously if you look at the calendar, there's not one on the, there's nothing coming up that looks like it could be set for a musical, which I think is good. You want to give some space considering it took you so long to get to this point, but no, I think that they've shown that they can handle it.
Just really quick, I mean, if we just want to talk about the voice acting, I think the voice acting in here is exceptional. Benjamin Bratt, you know, I haven't seen much of him outside of, like, Doctor Strange, which was a great little role. I really thought that he stuck out in the film. In that, he voices Ernesto de la Cruz. Really loved him. Gael Garcia Bernal is, he's one hell of an actor. You know, yeah. You may remember him specifically from Rogue One. He was our very Han Solo-esque character. What was his name? Anyways, you know, that was what he was, you know, in there. And I think that he's really the standout performance for me, in this film. And I don't know if he's continuing more work with Disney. I think, you know, he is going to be playing Zorro in Z, you know, Zorro Reborn. So that seems kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Don't have any issues with that. I really, really look forward to seeing him just kind of get a little bigger and a little bigger because I just like the dude. I really do. So did anyone else have a, I'm sorry, he wasn't in Rogue One. I take that back. Does anyone else want to speak towards that at all? You, Tamba Men. Sorry, that's what I was thinking of.
Which is I will say one of the great things that I think they did was rather than try to force, if you look at the soundtrack, if you listen to the soundtrack, rather than try to force Benjamin Bratt to sing in Spanish, which he probably could have pulled off but not in an appropriate range, is that when it is in Spanish, when it's in English, it's him singing. When it's in Spanish, and it sometimes it switches in the same song, they have another singer who's filling that role, which I think lends credence to how they handled it.
Mm. And just to clarify what I was saying before, I was thinking of his partner in Tu Mamba Tambien, which is an Alphonse Cuarón film. That's Diego Luna, who's in Rogue One. Sorry. Had my actors all screwy over there. Melissa, do you want to say anything before we go into a spoiler category? Because actually, I will say right now, I do. There's another little small issue I have with what you could call the reveal in this film. I think that it just comes out of left field. Like, a little too harsh out of left field.
I think we should go into the spoiler section.
Yeah, do we have to go into that? But like,
so real fast before we do please. That, because we had spoken about the soundtrack on the board, on the page a little bit, and how it really doesn't give away anything of the movie. And looking back now, if you're looking for clues, it's actually in those, especially the five versions of Remember Me. So if you want to try to stay spoiler free, really truly wait to get the soundtrack till after you've seen the movie.
That's a good point.
If you're like Pete and can read into things, you'll probably be spoiled. If you're like me and just like listen to things like you and not pay much attention besides
that's
the sound.
That's why I didn't listen before. Yeah.
That's right. One of the versions has like something in parentheses and it really does ruin it, does spoil it.
They all do. You have to think of they all have parentheses so you know which version you're listening to. And that's where some of the stuff starts to get a little wonky.
Okay.
So don't read the titles.
Ignore that. Yeah, don't go looking into that. But I want to say, I would say without question, this is a movie to see in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go see a good movie? You want to go see a great Pixar movie? Maybe one of their best? Go see Poco Loco Coco. Go see Coco. For me, that comes fully endorsed. Melissa?
Yeah, same.
Courtney?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't endorse many things, but I'll stop the Juan Swanson right there. No, go see it.
Courtney, was there anything else you want to say towards it before we go into Lando spoilers?
Disclaimer, I said the score for WALL-E was composed by Giacchino and it's composed by Thomas Newman.
Ah.
So disclaimer, I knew as soon as it came out of my mouth I was wrong. So for those of you listening, don't correct me. I know I was wrong.
You're wrong. Here's an email. No. Okay. All right. So let's, guys, ladies, if you haven't seen Coco yet, go enjoy. Go take a look at it. I feel like a lot of you have seen it, though. So we're going to go into a spoiler section. We're just going to go into smaller details that maybe we liked or we didn't like. Because even if you really like something, there can be something that you don't like. It's weird. I know it's weird for a lot of people to accept that sometimes, but that is the thing. So we're going to go into the spoiler section of the show. So if you haven't seen it yet, go see Coco. Have a good week. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week when we are going to be pitting all the Pixar movies against each other in a grand old Pixar bracket. So that's going to be next week. And again, thank you so much for checking in. We'll see you guys later. And for everyone else who has seen Coco already and wants to, we're going to discuss some spoilers right now. So spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Here we go. All right. So, you know what? I guess, Melissa, we'll tell you, I guess me and Ryan will say what we were referring to before.
Mm-hmm.
The grandmother grabbing the guitar and smashing it, I felt was a little much. And then at the end, for her to still almost like physically put her hands on the kid to be like, no, you can't do this. It was like, all right, calm down. Like, we really seriously don't need to like injure people because you don't want someone to play a guitar. Like, it seemed really kind of dumb. And just way too much, like, over the top. I just felt like it was way too much.
I don't know. It didn't bother me. I felt like that smashing the guitar was appropriate in that situation because they had established, like, that the whole family, like, had such a vehemence towards music and, like, had, you know, like, the initial, like, she threw out all the musical instruments, you know, in the thing. So it's like, I don't know, that kind of fit. And, like, there was, like, that old school feel to the grandmother where it was, like, they would do that. They would, you know, throw things away. They would smash something. Like, I don't know. To me, that was not something that was, like, too overt. Like, I don't know.
It made it feel that way on the second go-around, near the conclusion of the film.
To me, like, the second
part... It was like, relax. What is he going to do? He's going to kill her with a guitar? Like, he's just going to play her a song. Like, you don't have to, like, violently approach the kid. And finally, the father was like, calm down for 2 seconds. You know, if the woman hears a guitar play, she's not going to die on the spot. Like, what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know.
I think that might be a cultural difference thing, too. I am not Mexican, but my understanding of... the family dynamic there is a matriarch,
mm-hmm.
and there is fear of the chancla, which we see in this movie where she chases him and throws sandals at him.
Yeah.
I think there is potentially maybe a little bit more of that kind of dynamic involved. Like I said, I can't truly speak to it because I am not of that descent, But I think that is something that might be a little bit more part of the culture.
It was just on that second play of it. I just thought it was like, it like pushed it. It was like, oh, come on, what is he going to do? You know, he's just going to play her a song. Like, it's not going to end the family. Like, I don't know.
But then you come from a point of view where this was the grandmother. So for her, whatever, 50, 60, 70 years, like, she's been inundated with this hatred for music. So, like, yeah, her initial reaction is to snatch the guitar away, is to take it away. So, yeah, even on that second thing of, oh, he's just going to play her a song, like, to Abuelita, like, that is still, like, the no-no. You don't do that. Like, you do – you put everything, you know – in front of your dying mother and music, because she hated, you know, she told you she hated music so much, you know, that you would do anything to make sure she didn't hear music, because you don't know, she is fragile. It could put her over the edge.
But did this kid just like knowingly come back from the land of the dead? Like, didn't the family kind of know this at this
point?
They
didn't know that.
No, he didn't?
No.
But he was missing,
he was
right?
gone all night and then he was back.
Right. So I will say is that there was, so they did embed with families, and they based that character off of several grandmothers that they saw in the when they were embedded in Mexico. But I think that it would have felt more natural to if they had actually kept. So in reading and doing a little bit of reading ahead of time, her original weapon of choice was a wooden spoon. Mm-hmm. And like, she was coming after people with wooden spoons, which that's, you know, throwing a shoe across an old woman, throwing a shoe, maybe not going to give you as much, but a swing with a wooden stick is going to leave a mark.
Yeah.
So they said, no, let's change that. You know, we were asked to change that. Our advisor said, no, let's make that something that's well-worn, that's not going to, you know, basically leave a mark. And so that's what they went with the well-worn shoe. And I think maybe it does a disservice to the character, just because it's like, okay, you don't see the necessary that like the aggravation boil over as much with a well-worn shoe as you would with a spoon, and so it kind of broke the pattern.
It may have made it a little easier to be like, oh, okay, well, from the start she's hardcore. Also, the flying shoe made me think of Eddie Murphy's Raw with the boomerang shoe.
I know people who have a serious fear of the chancla. Like, the sandal is a real thing. It's a real cultural thing. Like, one of my best friends would tell me that he was afraid to death of being beat to hell with a sandal by his grandmother. So, I mean, it's a cultural thing, too. So that was a good positive change. I mean, I've been chased with a wooden spoon. I haven't been chased with a sandal.
that was really... I just felt the second iteration of that just felt way too much for what the kid just went through.
But she didn't know it. That's the thing.
But we know that as the audience.
I know, but I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't agree with your disdain for it.
That's fine. You don't have to. The other thing was the reveal that Ernesto is a murderer.
That was pretty dark.
We just met him. We met him like 3 minutes ago. And it was like, no, he's a murderer. It's like, oh, well, Jesus. All right. I guess that's as quick as that's going to go.
I don't know. I thought they kind of did an interesting job with like tying it in. Like, he put that in the movie and like, you know, it was something that Miguel had, you know, in his mind, like idealized, like, oh, you know, his hero was the one that was poisoned, like this whole bit. Like, you see him and Ernesto like kind of miming along with the movie, you know, when mm-hmm. they do the whole toast, for then it to be flipped around in Miguel's mind, like, oh no, his hero was the one that was being poisoned, but in real life. Like, so I don't know, like, I didn't mind it. I thought it was dark for, you know, an animated film, but I thought it was interesting.
Mean, murder in an animated film kind of happens all the time.
Yeah, but you know, to
that
see the murderer
all the time. I don't know, I just thought it kind of came really fast. We just meet Ernesto. And then it happens. If it was just a little bit longer of a time spent with that character before, because all we ever get to know is nothing, actually. And then, you know, we meet him and then that's it. It's turned.
No, there is definitely a pause where he's, you know, with Miguel and they're, you know.
I know. I just didn't feel it was long enough. That's all.
Okay.
I didn't say there wasn't. I said I thought it was quick.
Okay.
I wonder if that's one of those things they didn't cut out, you know, because this is a relatively short Pixar film. Is if there wasn't more of that fleshed out and they just thought, you know what? It's fluff. It doesn't add to the story we're trying to tell. Let's just move it along.
Courtney, what were you going to say?
I think, too, that I don't know about you, Pete. I'm guessing yes, but I had figured out long ago that he wasn't his grandpa.
Yeah, so, that was from the start. Yeah.
Yeah, I think since we already knew that, having that kind of like really stark surprise, because I didn't know that. There was no way for me to guess that he could have been a murderer and killed him. I think having that kind of surprise in there was nice, considering that what's supposed to be, I guess, kind of like the big twist of the film isn't really a twist to me. I figured that out a long time ago.
Yeah, no, I don't think I mean, whenever a character says, I know this, you can always usually say like, yeah, it's probably not right. So like him not being his father, I thought was pretty well. I don't think they were trying to hide that, you know, maybe
from
like the youngest of audiences.
Yeah, from kids.
But I don't think they were banking on that to be the big thing. So they had this. I just thought it happened like super fast. That was all.
Yeah.
But I like the way they did it, you know, because it as soon as that happened, like everything fell into place. You were like, okay, well, this is going to be his father in this. I mean, I kind of figured that out a little bit earlier too. But I did not think like he poisoned him. You know, that was a bridge too far to jump from, you know, and just like making assumptions.
But it was great because like upon like second viewing, like when they're making the musicians are making fun of Hector, calling him chorizo, like, oh, he choked on his chorizo. And he's like, no, it was food poisoning. Like then like you watch it a second time. You're like, oh, well, kind of like. Huh.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. He had the overall idea.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't know exactly, but he had the overall idea.
Yeah.
What was else, you know, some you know, smaller details, Melissa?
For me, when I was referring to the fact like, okay, like they were all reunited again, but then it was like, oh, no, I still need to get back to De La Cruz to get the picture for Hector because he had stolen the picture. Then it was like, okay, we're going to do this whole bit. I get the picture. And then, oh, no, I'm falling. I lose the picture. Like that second loss of the picture, I was like, oh, again, like we just did all of this and now it's gone. Like it kind of got me like, oh, like, I don't know. I was a little frustrated. But then like the reveal that Mama Coco had kept the ripped picture, like then I was like, okay, like. It didn't bother me, like, the second viewing.
You didn't want, like, an underwater sequence directed by James Cameron where he goes to get the photo?
No.
You sure?
No, it was just,
who
like...
Who doesn't want that?
It could have came out, like, in 4 years.
Yeah, we'll save it for...
I feel like we saw another movie recently that did that to us where it was like, got it, nope, got it, nope, got it, nope.
It was Moana. Well, kind of like where we have like, Maui and Moana can do it. No, they can't. Oh, they're going to do it.
Oh, yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, Maui's consistent, like... No. Yeah. No. Yeah. No. Yeah. And then the movie's over. You're like, all right, well, happy that worked out for him. Yeah, he had a lot of turns in that, like from up and down. They did it like two or three. They did it like three times, I think, in that movie.
Yeah, it was a mix of like him doing it and Moana doing it too. So it was kind of annoying in that one. So I almost felt that way when the picture hit the water in this one. And I was like, oh, no, like... He's got to get home. Like, we can't do another 10-minute adventure somewhere. Like, what are we going
to
do with this?
Got to wrap this up. We have to sit through a 20-minute short. Is this a two-hour movie? Like, in reality, it's an hour and 49 minutes as it is now. I think it moves off at a really quick pace. Right? Hour and 49, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, does this need to be? I don't think it needs to be any longer. No.
No.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Maybe just a little, just another couple of moments with Ernesto before the turn. But
before they put the green underlighting on him to just put the spotlight on the Disney villain.
Got to get that green in there.
What did I want to... What was else? Other things. Other things. Anyone? Ryan?
So the spirit guys, Pepita and then Dante at the end. Pepita was... I love Pepita. And I came home and I have a cat who's very similar in nature to Pepita. That's like, are you my spirit guide?
I thought that was a great
you, the use of... and I'm not going to try to pronounce the word in Spanish because I will butcher it and I know better. But the spirit guides throughout the film and the use of that art form, the wood carving kind of art form for all these characters was just really, really well done.
Courtney?
Yeah, I didn't have many problems. I thought that the dog spirit guide was he wasn't my favorite sidekick. I mean, I was kind of over the whole tongue thing pretty quickly. His tongue kept wrapping around his face and slapping everything.
Was that another movie recently? No, I just kept thinking of Carrie Fisher's dog.
Oh, Gary Fisher.
I did. Tongue. I kept thinking of Carrie Fisher's dog.
Yeah. I think there is another movie that's used like a dog with a crazy tongue before, and I'm certain there is, and I can't think of what it is. Is it All Dogs Go to Heaven? I don't remember. Either way, I didn't think he was the best little sidekick we've had.
Well, I thought it was interesting because, like, he is, like, the slapstick, like, I don't know, like, I feel like you're not meant to pay attention to him, kind of like Miguel does. And then I loved the reveal when he was like, oh, you were trying to help me all along when you were, like, getting into trouble or pushing me a certain way. Like, he was actually, like, doing stuff on purpose. So, I don't know, I thought it was, like, an interesting kind of twist to that. You know, he's not just, you know, the dumb sidekick kind of thing.
Yeah.
I will give, you know, I meant to say this during the regular review, but I just totally forgot about it. I really think that the best compliment I can give this film is when Miguel returns to the human world, I had the same feeling as when Sen in Spirited Away is back in the... in the, you know, back meeting her parents, basically, after she crosses the river. Like, I had felt that we were in this other land and a real journey, you know, took place, and the regular world was weird looking to me. Like, it was so bland all of a sudden because you were in this other place that was so filled with things to look at. But actually, there's a weird element to that. And I just... absolutely, I had not had that feeling since I saw Spirited Away. So that's one of the biggest compliments I have. Guys, is anyone sort of disappointed that the afterlife is really just a lot of bureaucracy and bullshit that you got to deal with, evidently? Because a lot of paperwork going on, a lot of things. Like, the afterlife was just life, it seemed.
Only the customs of it. Well, it seemed like it was you know, fun as long as no one forgot you, unless you were trying to cross the border, and then customs was going to just be customs.
Yeah. It was interesting.
It seemed kind of like purgatory to me, which that's a Catholic thing. So it would go with the whole, you know, cultural thing. It did seem just like a lot of waiting.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. That was one of the aspects. I was like, oh, well, the afterlife is just sort of the same.
I don't know.
Like
I don't know that culture.
Concert tickets that I can't get into. Everyone had housing that was different. Actually, we never see what kind of a housing the family has, now that I think of it. We never see them, like, wherever they live.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But that city is so sprawling. The city was crazy looking. It was gorgeous.
But it was funny, because every time they were like, oh, we have to get across town, like, it never felt like they actually were getting across town. Like, there was
a very condensed map.
Yeah,
it's like there's a really big picture, but we only dealt with like these three square blocks, you know, which is fine.
Say like across town, but like, it never felt like that.
Which is good. I don't think we need to see to them like, this is a really long walk.
But we also like saw some really interesting visual, you know, differences in each part that they went through. And I enjoyed the visuals.
So?
Well, like you see like the, where we, first hear Hector talk when he goes into that area, where he goes into the area where everyone's his family because they're not really, like, they don't have their families remembering them.
Yeah, that was pretty sad.
Yeah, so, like, it was, like, that area. And then you have, like, obviously De La Cruz Plaza and his mansion. Like, you have some, and then you have a stadium because every city needs a stadium. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
I know.
You all right with that?
Gotta put concerts on somewhere.
Gotta put these concerts for the dead people on somewhere.
Is that where the football players play? That's all I want to know.
So did anyone else, did you guys have anything else you wanted to speak of or just kind of talk about, you know, towards the plot or what's something that stuck out for you in a positive manner or a negative manner or something that you weren't clear on? Anything?
I just love the flower bridges.
Mm.
It's really gorgeous.
Just visually, it was awesome.
That's a question I want to put towards everyone at the end. Go ahead, Ryan. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, having a grandmother who's not doing well and a father-in-law who is in hospice currently, there was a lot of Coco that I see in my daily life. Like, how they captured that, for one, not just the family side of it, but how that person comes and goes with depending on what's happening around them that was truly touching at the end.
Yeah.
Does anyone think that this shouldn't be in Epcot?
Yes. Well,
you do not think so.
I will qualify that, but yes, I don't think so. If we're talking replacement of Grand Fiesta Tour.
Yes.
I will absolutely speak against it because this movie, 90% of it takes place in the land of the dead. And I feel like that would take away from the real world culture that you're going to see if you, you know, when you see, when you're going through the current version of that attraction. I think the gallery and the interpretation of that, of the land of the dead in that realm is great and they could expand upon it. But I think changing that attraction maybe takes away too much from the real world side of Mexico that you can see today.
So what if they, instead of changing Grand Fiesta, because I don't think Grand Fiesta has a big enough footprint for a Coco attraction, what if you extend the Mexican Pavilion, you have a back entrance where you cross a flower bridge, and now you are in the Land of the Dead, and that's where you go through the Coco attraction?
I'll buy into that 100%.
Okay. Ryan is going to write the check.
What if it was more 50-50? Because actually, I mean, all they'd have to do is, I mean, yeah, the footprint as it is right now is not large enough. Especially just for a queue.
Mm.
But you could always just expand that from where it is. I don't know if they would put in a second attraction. I don't know if they would do that. But I would love it. I would love it. Love it.
I feel like there are...
Wouldn't it be, you know, maybe more culturally appropriate if they did like a festival around the appropriate time of year where it was Coco-centered and they actually kind of did more education on Day of the Dead?
My only thing is that pavilion is kind of tiny and they already have people flocking there just for the bar, like the tequila bar and the other bar they put in. And like the restaurants in there are fantastic. So it gets its due in that aspect. But I feel like there's just so much there that I feel like a festival would overly crowd it. You'd have a lot of people missing it because they just want to get to the drinks. And I would be disappointed that the festival wouldn't give the holiday it's due kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
And really the way to go is to go the way the Frozen did, you know, when they added the summer house and all of that, is to just, the Odyssey is not serving a true purpose for itself anymore. Aside from we can hold festival events in there when we absolutely need to. There's space there if they really truly want to go that route.
Yeah.
What if the split on the Land of the Dead in modern day, you know, or you know, the Mexico of Coco was more 50-50 on the attraction, Ryan? What about then?
I could see that, especially if it was, I mean, there's a way where, you know, Miguel's trying to get back to the Land of the Dead. And so you have that whole, you have all the current Mexico stuff up front. And then where you have like the tunnel where the party scene now. Well, no, that wouldn't even work. That where you had like the, it's a small world scene now starts like your Land of the Dead kind of scene,
yeah.
And you go into it from there. That would be, yeah, I'm good with that too.
Also, I mean, can't we get an attraction that just doesn't follow the plot of the film? Why can't it just be Miguel is showing us around, and we make a stop in the Land of the Dead? You know, like that's one of the sections of the ride. Like, why do we? Because that's all the assumption that we have in our minds because that's what we've been given so much of recently. Why can't we just not just do a retread of the plot of the film? Like, we don't need it. It's okay.
Which I felt is like what the Frozen attraction was trying to do, but didn't.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like it enough. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's not. Like, that's not a retread of the plot, but it feels like a retread of the plot, which is crazy. You know, like, it's not. Clearly, it's not, but it feels like it.
Yeah.
Weird. So I don't know.
The whole thing is Miguel's mission because they lose the Hector's photo. He has to get back to Landa to find that photo.
Oh, no.
That's the mission.
That's fine. Yeah. If you want to make it like a pseudo sequel, that's fine. Yeah. They lose it or the returning ghost of Ernesto steals it and he has to go get it back. We find out that even when you do like, because Ernesto is still there. We never see, he's not gone. We don't see him
forgotten.
No, he's
trapped under a bell.
Yeah.
So he escapes. He's close to being forgotten, but his final thing of revenge is going to be stealing Hector's photo and having him suffer the same fate, and then off we go. Also, just people, take two photographs of people. That's all you gotta do. I don't understand this.
No one's expensive back then.
No one makes doubles of anything. No. They give you doubles at Genovese when you bring in your roll of film.
Are there even any more Genovese
back in 1989?
Yeah, like, really.
You go to the film center in front of Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
You buy a high ISO film for $35, and everything will be taken care of for you. Okay, what do you guys think? Can we wrap it up?
Yeah.
All right. That's our show this week, guys. That was a pretty lengthy review of Coco, but there's a fair amount to discuss. And had a lot to discuss at the top of the show, so I hope you enjoyed all of that. As we hinted at earlier, not hinted at, I said it. We're going to next week do another bracket, and we were waiting for Coco to come out so it could be factored into this one. And we are going to do a Pixar bracket. We are going to put all the films that Pixar has put up there, not the shorts, the films itself. We'll do the shorts another time. And pit them up against each other and find out who reigns supreme. So that will be next week. And very excited about that, because then the following day, we take off for Disneyland.
Woohoo!
Woohoo. So that's going to be the next week. So I think that's really it.
Yeah, so obviously the week that we are in Disneyland, I don't know if we're going to have
a movie on the Patreon,
a live thread, unless...
No, we won't. We probably won't. But we'll, you know, we'll make an announcement of that and let everyone know
on the
page and stuff when it's over there. But hey, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Pixar really honestly put up one of their best films. I had a 2 seconds of I really wish that moment didn't happen. But outside of that, I really thought this was top to bottom one of the best things they've ever done. Go out and see it if you have not seen it. I think it's their best offering of the year. Not that, you know, not nailing Cars. I thought Cars 3 was fine. But this shows how kind of pedestrian like that other one was. So go see Coco. Enjoy. Have a good holiday finishing up all your leftovers. I'm assuming that's still happening, right?
Yes.
That should still be happening. So, all right, guys. This episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, and traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, of course, you're listening to Pogo's There You Are. You can find this track over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter for this show at DisMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to that group. And if you're already in there, add your friends. That's a massive way to help us out also with reaching more people on the Facebook group. You can find the show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And Melissa has a couple of more spots where you can find us.
Yep, if you head to Instagram, go to Disney Magic Hour Podcast. You can see all our photos up there. Upcoming, a lot of Disneyland photos, yay! And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find out how to support the show there.
Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. Use the Main ST Gazette for us on Twitter and Instagram. And search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook and you'll find our page.
Hey, Courtney, everyone can find you in the Facebook group, right?
That's right.
All right, guys. So until next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Poco. So what?